Hello, welcome to Outside In. I'm John Burns, and would you believe, this is actually episode 17. I thought maybe I'd do about half a dozen, you know, but now here we are on episode 17. If this keeps going, this lockdown, I'll be like, this is episode 243. I've read every climbing book I can think of. I can't think of anything else to say. I'll be there, you know, I won't be far off. Anyway, today's featured book, the book I'm going to read to you today, is Nick Bullock's Tides. And Nick's a retired prison officer who spends his retirement enjoyably, I'm sure, climbing all over the world. He's climbed on Denali and the Himalayas. He's one of the hardest climbers around. But he's also an extremely fine writer, an award-winning writer. Some writers win awards, you know. I've never understood it, but there you go. He's a great writer too. And in the extract I'm going to read you, I'll just give you a little bit of a warning first, because there are some Welsh words in it. Now, if you've listened to this show before, you'll know that my foreign pronunciation isn't that brilliant. My denouement, you know, that my great failing, I have to admit, is Welsh. And if you're a lover of the Welsh language, I suggest you switch off now, to be honest, because what I'm about to do to the Welsh language, you don't want to hear it, you know. I am to the pronunciation of Welsh words, I suppose, what Donald Trump is to the truth, you know. You see, the problem for me pronouncing Welsh is I just don't have the phlegm. You need a certain amount of phlegm to get the hall. What do you call the hall? I can't do it. And as far as I can see, I don't know what happened in Wales, but they've got a hell of a lot of W's in Wales. When they set Wales up, they must have, you know, got a job lot, because there's thousands of them. So that having been said, I'll read you a section of about a Welsh climb, this is an excerpt from Nick Bullock's Tides. Cravings, April 2005, Llanberis, Wales. This wall was calling me. This wall had called for 6 years, and once again I had succumbed. I was an addict. I was prepared to give everything for my addiction. My life again stood still until this climb. The bells was complete. The tides pealed a tentative chime. Obsession. I had gone cold turkey, done recovery. This climb had been with me almost from the start. And here I was again. Here I was again. The chime of steel on steel electrified me. Like the clapper hitting, the pitch increased with each blow. Baritone, tenor, alto, and finally soprano. The thin, rounded blade, an inch in length, entered into the tight crack with each insistent thrust of the hammer's head. I laughed. It's a mad, on-the-edge sound. The nervous excitement tickled my intestines. Each swing of the hammer, each sweet ring in every millimetre of depth. The black head of the peg flattened with the pounding. Black turned to silver with each repeated hammer blow. The previous day we had brought all the paraphernalia to place a new peg and dispense with the old. But we had bottled it. What if the old peg was removed and we couldn't place a new one? The climb would be ruined. And so would we. The peg had saved my life once. The peg had been 19 years old then, cracked and flaking. That was 6 years ago. But the previous day, when we'd come prepared to replace it, It had appeared solid as we brushed and practiced the moves. The previous day, it had appeared strong when I knew I wouldn't be starting out on the lead, when I had cheated with the rope running up. This time, Dougal Taverner was on for his climb, Stroke of the Fiend, a route that traverses the wall from left to right. I had climbed Stroke of the Fiend, a redhead E7 like the Bells, in 1999 with Tim Neal, at a time when I was indestructible and immortal. It was a time when I was arrogant and as sure of my abilities as Taverner was now. At 24 years old, and with only 4 years climbing experience, it scared me to think how good Dougal might become, how full and successful his climbing life might be. But at what point does a person realise their mortality? At what point does life outside the climb take precedence? Would he burn out or just flicker into existence? Would he take a less obsessive path? Would meeting someone special mean more to him than a climb? At what point does life move forward, and having to push and test one's strength of mind and one's drive? But it's only climbing, Helen had said. But for me, at that moment, it felt more nourishing than food. Was this wrong? Climbing was life. Climbing was as real as anything else in this life. Climbing at that moment was more real than TV, more real than computer games, more real than material goods, more real than families, relationships, more real than comfort. Helen had refused to belay me, or be anywhere near where I decided to step from the boulders. But Taverner had stepped into the loop. Stroke of the Fiend uses the peg used for the Bells. But as Taverner had started to remove the tat clove hitched around the neck of the peg, the steel had crumbled like a rotten egg. Dougal quickly retightened the faded tat and gave me the bad news. That was it. Game over. Obsession over. Move on. Life waits for no one. Fuck that. Dougal knocked on the door of the house standing at the top of the cliff to beg for a hammer. I ran the steep hill back to the car park to collect the pegs from my van. All my doubt ran down that steep hill with me. Would I be brave enough to attempt to remove the peg placed by Redhead in 1980? What if I couldn't replace it? The thought of not finishing the climb had become a part of my history. The thought of not finishing the climb that had become a part of my history more than any other rock climb drove me on. The thought of actually starting on the long, lonely lead was less frightening to me than the thought of not starting it at all. Desire. Swinging from the abseil rope, I failed to place a thick and strong lost arrow immediately above the frail peg. No way would I ever attempt to remove the old peg. Trying again, the lost arrow blanked out for a second time. I was gutted and relieved. Move on! What does it matter? Move on! The voice of castigation flooded my mind. You don't want to do this. It scares you. People know you've had the confidence to try it once before. That's enough then, isn't it? Run away. Was my life turning? Once I pushed hard, I gave everything. I was brave enough to try this climb before, without practice. Is this what getting older has done? As the clock ticks, do we grasp at the ever-decreasing years? Or has my ego calmed? 4 inches above the peg, a small, thin crack gave hope. The smallest peg I had was removed from the carabiner. The peg was a blade of thin steel, as thick as a coin and 2 inches in length. The first hammer blow failed, but then, as if some evil spirit looked down and wished me on my way, the thin steel bit. The heavy hammer pounded, and with each resounding blow, the peg entered the wall a little further. Eventually, it could go no deeper. I smiled to myself, knowing there was no going back. Looking up, Dougal's head was silhouetted against the blue sky. I gave him the thumbs up. We danced a cautious, sideways dance for the rest of that day. Dougal led the crux pitch of stroke, testing the new peg. I was grateful for that, although it would be different taking a lob on it from above, which is where the line of the bells would take me. I went running the next day, and often when running, thinking takes away the pain. I had cheated, several times in fact. Once from the start, practicing the traverse beneath the cad flake, five times through the crux session, and once on the final traverse and the exit groove. I was not proud. I pushed my body, pounded the slate of the miner's track, lungs burned, sweat ran, grey crunching underfoot. I wanted pain. I wanted to push myself for cheating. I wanted to take the full hit because I had given so much to climbing. And other aspects of my life, such as relationships, friendships and family, had taken second, third, even fourth place. I needed the perceived success. Otherwise, what was the use? I had watched Dad cope with the death of his 28-year-old brother, and Gran and Grandad, and not once did I see him shed a tear. A few years after the death of Grandad, I visited my parents at their house in Cheadle. It was winter, and snow lay on the frozen ground. I decided to go for a walk through the graveyard behind St. Giles Church and visit Grandad's grave. Walking above the town, my footsteps left a trail behind me, threading gravestones. Mounds of rotting flowers were covered in snow. The snow hid their withering. Looking around, I knew where the grave should be because Gran was buried there also. But there was no headstone. Mum and Dad had not bought one. I crouched beside the mound of earth and wept. Dad had a sister, Auntie Jude, that he had not talked to in years and didn't even know where she lived. She obviously shared the same blood because she had made no move to see that her parents had a headstone either. My dad had very few friends. He didn't spend any time away from home, not in the pub, nor walking nor socialising. Dad had walls. He appeared to need want no one apart from Mum. Time would tell if the bells would mean as much to me now that I had top-roped it. I reasoned to myself that having cheated death once when attempting the climb in good style, with only the middle spike on the cad for protection, I would now climb it using whatever style it took. I wanted the climb. I wanted the intensity. I couldn't let it go. I would use the climb as a stepping stone to gain the confidence to attempt other routes on the wall in better style. I slept alone in the climber's hut of Yin Etus. The wind caught against the rough-hewn stone of the building that stood beneath the road of the Lamberis Pass. The room was dark. Sheep shuffled outside, trying to escape the wind, trying to eke out an existence before the farmer collected them. The gurgle from the stream nearby made me think of 6 years ago, lying awake all night in Tim Neal's house, down the pass from where I lay, and my near-fatal attempt to attempt the bells the next day. I think that was some great writing from Nick there. I think he perfectly captures the tension the night before a hard climb. I feel that tension these days when I'm trying to get into an old pair of trousers. Though Nick's book, Tides, is available from Vertebrate Publishing. I think it's 30% off now. And I think you also get another of Nick's books, the name of which escapes me right now. Make notes, Burns. You can get those from visiting my lovely publishers on Vertebrate Publishing. I'll put a link on the page and you can check that out. I do hope you've enjoyed listening to Nick's book, and I look forward to hearing from you again Keep safe, people. Look after yourselves. And I'll see you soon. You take care. Bye-bye.